Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Answer Podcast. This week, we are joined by Aaron Moulton, who tells me he had a pretty traumatic near-death experience. How you doing, Aaron? You okay?
I'm doing well, thanks.
You were good. So if you could explain to us what was leading up to your near-death experience, and then talk us through about it.
Yeah, you bet. I was finishing up a shift at the hospital. I work as a nurse anesthesiologist, or an anesthetist, as might be said. So I work there doing cases in the operating room. And this was like an abdominal surgery. And I was relieved of my responsibility, and I was heading home and started to get into my vehicle. Actually sat down in my truck and started to feel kind of lightheaded, like maybe I had stood up too fast, or not sure what it was, but like, or maybe my, because we wear like the surgeon's caps in the operating room. So I wondered maybe if it was too tight and then the blood was suddenly coming into my head or something. And I took off my hat and I was thinking about it. And my vision was weird. Like, I had my phone close to my face like I normally did, but it felt like it was just too far away and it was blurry. So I took off my glasses and thought maybe because I have transition lenses and sometimes they make things weird and blurry. So I took those off. It was actually worse once I took my glasses off. And I was like, this is really weird. I don't know what's going on. Because I was trying to find an ATM to go to right after work, because I was going to meet my wife. And we had a little drive across town that evening with the kids. And I wasn't able to do that. I wasn't able to focus or even operate my phone all that well to do what I was trying to do. And I even did, like, I wear an Apple Watch. And so I thought, I wonder if I'm having like a weird arrhythmia. And so I did like an EKG on my Apple Watch, and it was normal. And I stuck my tongue out in the mirror because I thought maybe I was having a stroke. So I stuck my tongue out in the mirror, and my tongue was actually a little bit to the right. And I kind of blew it off because I'm like, yeah, I'm not having a stroke, but I'm kind of wondering if I might be having a stroke. And it's the kind of the disorientation, the vision changes, and the kind of slowly losing fine motor control was getting worse, like within maybe 5 minutes or less. And I thought, well, okay, whatever this is, I should probably get checked out. So I tried to call my wife, and she was not answering. I think she was on the phone with her mom. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the ER at the hospital where I'm working. And if it's nothing, and then it'll pass, it'll be fine. At least I'm there. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm about to go become a patient in the hospital where I work. And it just seemed a little weird. And it was only about a 2 minute walk to the ER. And I was kind of bumbling around, just using my key card to get through the doors that are like security doors. And so I started to notice like a continual decline of my coordination. And I finally arrived in the check-in area for the ER, the emergency room, and walked up to the window, kind of almost like threw my cards at the receptionist, like, I'm having symptoms. I'm not even sure if I should be standing up because there's a danger I could fall over. I'm just going to give you my information. If you could please check me in. And I sat down kind of in a hurry. And then I tried to call my wife again, and she answered. And she was still on board with, I hadn't spoken with her at all. So she was still on board with me driving to the meeting place we had with the kids. And I could hear her talking in the background, like, okay, kids, daddy's almost here. And I said, Kari, I need you to come here. I'm having symptoms. And she was like, what do you mean you're having symptoms? And I was like, a stroke. And she's like, okay, well, where are you and stuff? And she found out that I was just sitting, just waiting. She's like, no, you need to tell them that you're having a stroke. You can't just say you're having symptoms. You have to tell them so they can, because the clock is ticking if it's really a stroke. And if you can just pause for, okay. So I didn't even have the energy or like the confidence that I could get up and not like fall over. So I handed my phone to the guy sitting next to me, said, hey, could you hand my phone, which is my wife is on the other end. Could you hand it to the secretary so that she can talk to the secretary? And so he did that. And then my wife's like, my husband's there. He's having a stroke. You need to check him out, you know, get the ball rolling with him. And I was just kind of almost like spectating. I had like actions became very, had to be very deliberate for me. And I knew the urgency in my head, but I was just like, man, I just don't know. Like things feel like they're disconnecting. And so the triage nurse came out, did like a neuro check, and she was a little bit skeptical because I'm too young to be having a stroke. I don't know what she was going through her mind, but she's kind of like, okay, do this, do that. Okay, all right, get in this wheelchair. And then she's kind of like, well, okay, I guess I'll call a stroke alert. And they wheeled me into the back ER area. And as soon as I hear the stroke alert go overhead, and then this army of like 15 people comes rushing in, and they took my water away. I had a water bottle. I was about to take a sip because my mouth is dry. And I'm like, they're going to make me stop drinking water pretty quick. So and as soon as I put it up to my mouth, she snatched it out of my hand. And then they took my shirt off and put on a gown, rolled me into the CT scanner. Cause of this, the CT scanner allows you to see if there's an actual, like a brain bleed causing the stroke. And I've been in these environments a lot before, so it was pretty familiar. But this time, being a patient was very, very different and a bit kind of overwhelming, I guess, or surreal. And I knew that everybody knew what to do, so I just kind of like let them sort of move me over, and I was helping them a little bit as much as I could. But it was weird. Like as soon as I was in that machine, the worrying sounds maybe, but everything else going on, the symptoms of the stroke were starting to really get pretty intense. So I was laying there, and the CT scanner is not really tube shaped, but it seemed like I was going into a tube. It's more of a donut. And they were going to use contrast in my IV so they could enhance the image. They said, it's going to feel kind of warm going in your arm once we inject that dye so we can see what's going on. And so I'm laying there, and like the worrying sounds, I had my eyes closed and I could sort of see lights in my head or in my vision kind of blinking. And maybe I was imagining this blinking going on. And I love sci-fi and fantasy stories, movies, whatever. And all of that, all of those things together, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in a collider. Like I'm in a, like an atomic collider, and I'm being spun around in not horizontal circles, but like around, or yeah, in horizontal circles. And it was just strange and started to feel like I was in a wormhole, like being transported through space. And I couldn't wait to get out of the machine, even though it was a pretty small machine, just because I just didn't feel like I was very, I don't know, didn't feel very safe at all, just because of the way the symptoms were hitting me. And I was scared because I wanted my wife to be there. I didn't know how long it was going to take for her to get there. And as I was laying there, because I've read lots of near-death experiences, and I was kind of wondering, like, if I'm having a stroke, am I going to die? And if I'm going to die, is there going to be like a portal opening up? Is there going to be a light somewhere? At the end of the tunnel, am I going to be, are people going to start coming to take me away? And in that moment, my consciousness never became like diminished or anything. I was fully aware in that respect. And for some reason, the thought came into my head. I was like, if I do die, it's not because my consciousness is being snuffed out like a light. It's because something is happening to my body where my spirit or my soul don't want to be with my body anymore. And then I was like, 20 minutes ago, I was like worried about meeting up with my wife. I was at work thinking about work and all that stuff. And here I am like, is this how it ends? I've got a wife and two kids, like no lead up, you know, it's like all of a sudden, here's a sudden thing descending upon me.
What was that like? Because a lot of people, that's like, for me personally, I think that sounds quite scary. Like you start, or did it happen so quick, but in a way, like,
it was quick. Like, you know, like if you're in an accident or you fall or something where maybe you see your life flash before your eyes and you get really scared. Maybe you feel your heartbeat start racing or something, like, oh man, that was so close. Or like you almost get in an accident on the freeway or something. Oh man, I'm so mad. You know, I'm so glad I pulled out of that or something. But it was more like I was laying there and I was like, I literally thought, I'm like, so this is it. Like almost anticlimactic. Like, am I really just going to be like transported and my body's going to be left behind and my wife and kids are going to be left behind? Is that really how it's going to end? And I said, and at that point I was like, no, there's no way. I'm going to do everything that I can. I don't know if you've heard of the book called The Survivors Club. It talks about people who, when death approaches, they fight it, or they choose the moment that they let go. Like, there's one story where somebody like jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's a huge, very high bridge. I don't know if, you know, for listeners who are not in the United States, it's like, you know, bigger than life height of a bridge, and you have a long time to fall if you're jumping off that bridge. And people have been like mid air and they're like, you know what? I don't really think I want to die. And they change their minds, but they hit the water and like suddenly this one person, they like felt a force pushing them back out of the water and they survived. Even though they had, you know, life-threatening injuries, they reassessed their life and decided, you know what? I don't think I want to die. I don't want to go through that experience. And that's what I told myself, is like, I've got a wife and kids. I didn't really get to say goodbye in a way that was like a finality, and I needed to be there for them. And I had no idea what my vital signs were. I didn't know if my blood pressure was low or if I was hyperventilating or for some reason something's going on with my lungs that I wasn't getting enough oxygen. But I just said, I need to breathe deeper just to get as much oxygen as I can. Because, I mean, that's what we do when we take care of patients in the operating room. We're continuously monitoring all that stuff. And so I was trying to like just use the skills and knowledge that I had to be like, if it'll help me stay alive till help can come, or if I do have to die, at least I can be there for my wife to at least say goodbye, to see her face again. And I don't know if that made any difference. I couldn't see like the monitors, what was happening with my vital signs at that time. But they, once they finished the scan, they took me into the one of the larger bays in the ER. I guess for convenience, they felt like they needed extra space. And especially since I came in scrubs, they were probably kind of like, you know, he's one of us. We got to take extra good care of him. Or at least that's what I imagined in my head. And so they rolled me into this room, and I thought it kind of strange that there were like at least three nursing students at the back of the room, like parked on their computers, like looking at me and then looking at their computers and looking at each other. And I imagine them kind of like, oh, you know, look at him, he's crazy or whatever. And I was like, do they have to be here? Do they have to be right there, like front and center in my view to see me in my weakest moment, right? So they put me in the ER bay. And at this point, time is starting to like become, I don't know, incongruent. I can't piece the chronology together all that well. I just remember sitting there going, I know my wife is 20 minutes away. She ought to be here by now. Where is she? And I had my phone just sitting next to me on the stretcher. And people are coming in. They're doing neuro checks. They're like, okay, touch your fingers. Does this hurt? Can you feel that? You know, touch my nose, touch my finger. All these assessments going on. And I didn't know, or I picked up my phone and I was like, I don't know if she's going to make it on time, but I need to send a last message to her. So I type all caps, I love you, !! and then hit send. And then I think probably right after that, I told the nurse, the ER nurse, I said, I need you to call my wife. This is her phone number. So I could remember her phone number. Tell her what bay I'm in. I didn't know which bay I was in, so that she can just, as soon as she parks, she can just walk straight in, just to save that time, because I could not wait. And so she agreed to call my wife, and I think I blanked out or fell asleep, or I don't know what happened. I don't know if I'll ever know, but I slipped into like a bad movie, like a really bad dream slash time. Time was, I couldn't feel time. And what I saw, whether it was with my spiritual eyes or my mind's eye, was the worst hell that you could possibly imagine in your mind. I don't know if you've seen any of the AI videos that they've produced now. There's a show called Secret Invasion with it was a Marvel series with Nick Fury. And they used AI to produce like this melding in motion. There were faces and they would just kind of twist and contort and kind of become amorphous shapes.
I haven't seen
and
that.
I feel like that. Yeah, check it out. It's the first of its kind, that kind of introduction to the show. A little bit controversial because it's using AI.
Yeah.
But like people will show up with eyes in the middle of their foreheads, or like lips and noses are just weird. And I kind of, but I honestly think that a lot of this was blocked out of my mind. I know I remember being afraid. I remember it being dark. I feel like there were figures, but they were not like, they were only human. The best I could say there is they were humanoid. I couldn't count the number of them. I couldn't really see their faces. It was just the fear and the darkness was what really left the strongest impression on me. And the whole time I was, you know, completely and utterly petrified in fear.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
Would you say it's like, do you know when like you're younger and you're really, really, really scared? And like, was it like that type of fear that you could feel?
Well, it was, I think the fear itself was coupled with a gravity that my whole body was being pulled. So imagine yourself, you're on the edge of a cliff and the stretcher that I was on was like dangling over this infinite abyss. And I was being pulled down this stretcher into a chasm. It feels like it had a round shape to it, but there was no defined edges. I mean, what I was looking at was the curtains in the ER room, but I just felt like there was like a vacuum of space that was drawing me in. And I really felt like the room was on its end. Like if you're in a dollhouse or something, somebody just tipped over the dollhouse and I'm like sliding down off the edge of my stretcher. And this went on for, I don't know how long a period of time. And I just remember, I was like, what is going on? After my wife got there, I remember sitting there saying, why is this happening? I couldn't even complete a sentence. I was just, why is this happening? What's happening? And I felt like they were trying to come and take me. I don't know who they was, but I feel like somebody was taking me. I talked to a friend later who he was in the hospital with COVID, and he almost died during his time. And I just wanted to sort of test him, and I said, "Did you feel the pull?" And he goes, "Yeah, I felt the pull, and as soon as I felt that, I proned myself." So he turned himself on his stomach because he's also an anesthesia provider, so he knew that laying on your stomach helped your lungs work better. And so he kind of did what I did, where it's like, "No, I'm not going to die. No, forget about that. I know a little bit of what I can do." So he turned himself on his stomach to get better oxygenation, and that kind of reversed this pull that he was feeling. So I don't know if other people have described it, but I definitely felt it wasn't like strings. It wasn't in one spot. It was literally like a magnet just pulling me out of my body. And I don't know if my wife was there during which of those dreams she was there or not. I don't know if my body was technically dead. I don't know what the definition of dead is, if I was actually, if my spirit had left my body. As I learn more about this, I realize that people who are on the edge of death, they sometimes, multiple occasions, they'll come and go in and out of their bodies, or they'll see, their eyes, or they'll perceive, visual changes, that the difference between this reality and the next reality is beginning to blur. So let's see, what was next? So my wife finally arrived, and I found out later that there had been a massive rainstorm, like hailstorm, that had parked itself on the freeway between our house, where she was coming from, and the hospital. So this 20-minute drive had actually turned into a 10 or to an hour-long ordeal where she's crying the whole time in her car trying to get to the hospital for me. And but the freeway was a parking lot. There was puddles everywhere. People turned pulled off the side of the road with their hazards on because their wipers wouldn't keep up with the downpour. And so she had to drive through that to get to me. And when she did come in, I saw her, and I like reached out to her, and I pulled her closer, and was grabbing her arms. And I was telling her, like I said before, I said, why is this happening? And this is the most vivid thing that I can remember. And someday I think I need to draw a picture of it. But it's, do you remember in the movie, the first Matrix movie back in 1990, 24 years ago? You might, how old are you?
27.
So you were 3 years old.
But I've watched the Matrix movie.
Yeah, so could you remember where he touches the mirror? First, Morpheus says, what's reality? And Neo's like, I don't know. And then he touches the mirror, and the mirror like attaches to his finger, and then it like mercury, it comes over his hand and up his arm and up his body, and then it goes down his throat, and he basically becomes the mirror, and he's screaming just bleh. So I saw this vortex spinning around, and it was like circular, like gray floorboards spinning, almost like a, you've seen those machines that you throw like crates or pieces of wood or cars, and they've got these like rotating teeth that just grab stuff and chop it up into pieces. But this was like spinning around like this. And it was almost like I was watching myself be sucked into this hole. It had like a black hole feel to it. So I'm feet first being pulled into this. And then it's, as I'm going in, those floorboards are coming up my legs, up my whole body. And they completely like overtake my whole head, and then just pulled me into this vortex. I didn't see what was on the other side. I just saw myself go into that.
Did it not like, so a lot of people have said when they have been pulled through, they just feel like happy to go there, but this time, as you're saying, it didn't feel like that.
No,
just
I didn't see what was on the other side. I just saw like myself being pulled into that. And the moment that my wife came into the operating or into the to the ER, I had my hands on the side of the stretcher, and my heels were like literally like digging into the sheets and the mattress of the stretcher, like doing like a backwards walk, like, don't let them take me. Like literally just doing everything I could to not go into this, to follow this gravity. And I don't know how many times I actually saw like that vortex thing, but I just kept feeling this pull toward that. And I'm sure my wife, I don't know, I don't remember actually seeing her face, but I'm sure that she was just like, not sure how to deal with the situation. She said when she first saw me in the stretcher that I was pale, I looked like a deceased person, that the color had gone out of my face. There's this little spot, like she must have been using this to gauge, because there's this little spot right on my nose from like sun exposure. And she said, I couldn't see that. It was gone. So I don't know. That makes me question, you know, was my spirit out of my body at that time? Was it coming and going? Was it like, some people describe like a silver cord connecting you, that's like the elastic that's connecting you to your body. And maybe I was stretching that cord. It never disconnected. And so she saw my condition and how afraid I looked and what I was going through. And as I was being pulled into this, I don't know if it was at that very moment, but as I was being pulled into this vortex thing, I had my eyes closed as it was happening. And I remember like hearing the sound of my voice echoing through the room. I don't know if I was screaming or yelling or, but I just remember the sound of my voice as loud as I could possibly scream. And then I was like shaken up, like, oh my gosh, I'm like acting out what I'm acting out my dream or whatever I'm seeing, this vision. And like, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to go to a mental institution because I'm just acting crazy right now. And I'm screaming, like hallucinating or whatever. So I think it was about that moment where she started praying over me. She put her arms around me and she was saying, you know, like, Heavenly Father, bless him that he'll have peace. And she had already, like, based solely on the information that I was having a stroke and I was in the hospital, she had contacted all of the family members, told them to pray for us. She posted on Facebook for all of our Facebook friends to pray for me and for her. And so we had people praying for us in those moments. And one of our friends who lives in Missouri, probably, I don't know, 1,500 miles away, was just painting her house that day around that time. She was like painting one of the bedrooms and all of a sudden had this impression that she needed to pray. She didn't even know who to pray for. But she heard it. She felt it multiple times. She's like, okay, I'll pray later. And it was like, no, you need to pray right now because you'll forget. She's like, okay, I don't know who to pray for. So she started praying. And once she started praying, then she realized that she needed to pray for Aaron and Kari. So that's how I feel. That's how powerful those prayers were. And so as she was saying that prayer, I was listening to her say those words. And I was like, okay, this is what I got to do. So I don't know, with people that you've talked to or what other listeners may have experienced or seen, but I almost interrupted her prayer to do, basically it's a rebuking of Satan, and you say it in Jesus's name and you raise your arm. And it's something that I learned from my parents, that if we are ever in a situation that we feel like the devil is attacking us, right? And I wasn't sure if that, I wasn't even sure if it was demons from beyond doing what they, what was going on. But I was like, just checking boxes. Like, if this works, then great. Prayer, whatever I got to do. I don't want to be in this place. And so I did that. And I was still checking in and out here and there. So I wasn't able to keep track of like, okay, as soon as I did that, everything was okay. You know, but my wife said that I calmed down. I settled down after that, and maybe I was able to get more peaceful rest. But meanwhile, the symptoms are still going on with the stroke. Right-sided weakness, cloudy thought, visual disturbances. It was, I don't know if anybody's ever described this before, but imagine you're sitting like maybe in a hallway or in a room, and all the objects in your field of view, they were flat. And they look like cardboard cutouts, but then like they were arranged in various depths of field. So as I was looking out, I'm seeing like, it's almost like it was pretend, like a stage set. Have you ever seen it, like been to a play where they have like, everything is designed to warp your sense of depth perception?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So that's what I felt like everything in reality was, is like everything is just a stage set. It's like they roll it on and off the stage. And eventually that resolved. But at this point in time, I was like, everything is like cutouts. So as I started to calm down, and then one of our friends, or two of our friends that they must have seen our Facebook post for whatever reason, they looked at it while they were driving. They had decided to go to, they're also members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And they had decided to go to the temple, which is like a more holy and sacred church for us. And they decided to go to the one that was up by our house that time, even though it was farther away from where they normally would go. They saw the Facebook post and they were on the way to that temple. And they're like, would you like us to stop by? Because we're like two exits away from the hospital. And I had asked, I'm like, is there anybody who can give a blessing? So we, in our church, the blessing is what we call an ordinance, or like a rite that you can perform for people who are sick or needing extra blessings. And so I said, yes, please, if they can come, that would be so great. And this particular friend of mine, he is a newer, he's only been a member of our church for a couple of years, and he hadn't had a chance to do this blessing on his own yet. So they arrived, and I was, oh, I'm so glad to see you. Thanks for coming. I feel so much better to have like friends and people coming to see me. And I said, can you give me a blessing? He goes, I don't have, because we use olive oil as part of the ordinance or the blessing. And he was like, I don't have any with me. He didn't come prepared to give a blessing. I said, that's okay. I have some in my wallet. We have this little pouch you can tear open and there's oil in there. And I was able to remember how to do all of the blessing. I said, if you can't remember it, I think I can remember it. Like I was rehearsing it in my head, like, okay, I actually think I can remember all this stuff. And I'm because I was very determined to get the blessing. And I, maybe God helped me remember all of that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And, definitely. That's
what yeah, I yeah. Yeah. And so I just said, I'll start you off and then you just repeat after me. And so that's what he did. And when he did the blessing, he said, I bless you that you'll make a full recovery, that you will not have anything remaining from the stroke, and that you have a more work to do in this life, or because you have more work to do in this life. And that was, it was pretty brief. That was probably his, you know, it was his first blessing ever. And I felt a lot more relaxed at that time. At some point during this time, the emergency room doctor came in and said, Mr. Moulton, We're not sure if you're having a stroke. We know that the CT scan did not show any signs of bleeding. Some of your symptoms are a little vague. So we're continuing to work on, you know, what might be going on. And my wife was there, and I'm so glad she was there because of her nursing background, she was able to be a really good advocate for me. But she said, well, what about a clot buster? Can he have a clot buster? And I think part of the reason she asked was because one of my friends, like I can't remember if he was like 38 or 42 or something, but he had a stroke 3 or 4 years ago at a very young age. And he almost didn't get the clot buster in time, but his wife started noticing weird behaviors. Like he started to forget his kids' faces. And so she said, what about the clot buster? And he said, okay, I'll check on that. And came back 10 minutes later and said, it's fine with the neurologist. He says you can, there's no contraindications to you having the clot buster. Because they just don't want to give you the clot buster if it's a bleed. Because then it would really, you know, cause a lot more bleeding. And so he asked me, he said, do you want us to give you that? And I was like, big thumbs up. That's what I really, really want. I felt in my heart that that was what I needed. That was going to help these symptoms go away. Because there was a point where I saw three things in front of me, three choices, almost like a multiple choice question. It was like, die and all this nightmare ends, but you don't get to come back. You don't see your wife or your kids. You stay in this, you've seen Lord of the Rings, right? Mordor place, this place of torment. You stay here for who knows how long, or you get better. Not sure how you get to the get better part, but you get better. And I was like, I don't want the middle. I only want one of the two. I'd rather die or stay alive than stay in this middle region, middle area. But what I started to notice was after they gave me the clot buster, as I was still having these periods of going in and out or checking in and out, but the time between checking in and out and seeing reality, the reality got longer. Because the doctors would come in and say, how are you feeling? And I'd start talking and I'd try to answer their question. And then I kind of, or like, what was the question again? You know, I just couldn't keep a train of thought. But after a little while, I was able to stay in reality to the point where I didn't have any more. And this was like inside of an hour to 2 hours. And that, while my friends were there, the one who gave me the blessing and our friend Brittany, I was sharing dad jokes with them right before they left. And so I said, I feel 95% better. I feel like, you know, it was crazy, everything that's been happening, but I feel like I'm going to make a full recovery and then I'll be, you know, maybe by tomorrow I'll be 100% or 99%, which is crazy. I mean, I'm having a stroke, right? None of it was, there's so many like unknown territories in my mind at that time and still today, but I'm just grateful that I got there on time. I had all of the prayers and help. I stayed in the ICU that night and the night after that, and I was back to work. That was on a Thursday, or that was on a Wednesday. So I was Thursday, Friday, and I was back to work by the next Tuesday.
That's incredible. But it goes,
I would have gone back on the Monday, yeah, but yeah.
This, but you go to show, doesn't it, to anyone that's listening as well. If you ever have any sort of symptoms like that, where you know you're not right. It's like the same with my dad before he passed away. He knew he wasn't right. And even he was driving and he literally just pulled in straight into the hospital. And just, that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry about your dad.
That's all right. But it's just, it's just anyone really, isn't it? It's worth getting it looked at instead of worrying about it. I'm one of them myself as well. Like, sometimes I should maybe go doctors and get checked out. I still won't do it because I'm worried about the outcome. Right.
Well, thinking about that, what your dad reminded me is like, I feel like it was a miracle in itself that it didn't happen while I was at work, like literally supervising the anesthesia of a patient. Or if I had gotten in my car and started driving home, I could have been stuck in that storm or incapacitated in some way, caused damage, caused harm to myself or someone else on the road. So it was amazing that time frame, that the symptoms hit like in that window of time, which is not that long. I walked out of the building, it was like 30 seconds to my car, and I could have been, driving in a matter of seconds.
It's like someone's watching over you, isn't it? If you get what I mean.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, see, it seems that we're sort of like coming near the end of it. I've got a question I'd like to ask. So, obviously, you've been through this in a place where you believe could be hell. How does that change your life now? From like, because obviously, if you're religious and you believe in Jesus Christ, do you think that maybe that was like a bit of a punishment for things you've ever done or anything like that? That's sort of like how I would feel.
It's crazy. Like, I thought about it because I'm like, I've always been a believer. I was born in, as my parents were members of this church. I always went to church and never experienced a time where I was like, yeah, I just don't, church isn't for me. But at the same time, nobody is perfect. The only person that's perfect is Jesus,
Yeah,
right?
of course.
So I thought, I don't, it didn't, I was never explicitly given to me like why I was seeing that place. But I can tell you that even the most righteous person would be reevaluating their life at this point in time, saying, I really don't ever want to, I want to eliminate the possibility that I could possibly be drawn back into that place. So yes, I have evaluated and looked at my life and thinking, maybe there's a place that I can improve. There's always a place that I can improve. And so the other thought is like, why, what is this area that I went? I don't think that it was hell necessarily, like, but I don't have any doubt that it was something like hell, but not the exact location of hell. What I think it was is that it was actually an intermediate zone or area. Some people describe it as the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And from my religious teachings, that there was a war in heaven between Lucifer, aka Satan, and Jesus Christ. The people, the unborn children of God were together. They had a council or they had a meeting. They said, okay, Jesus Christ is going to be your savior. And then Satan raises his hand, or Lucifer, and says, no, follow me and I'll save everybody, right? And nope, there won't be any sin, but I will be elevated to above God, right? So he lusted after God's power, and there were people that followed him. And this is in there's an allegorical description of this in Book of Revelations, talked about the dragon taking a third of the host of heaven down to hell with him. And those followers of Satan, they're here, they're among us, and they do Satan's bidding. They tempt us to do the wrong thing. And through study of other people's near-death experiences and study of the scriptures, I've come to realize that what I was seeing was just this kind of a margin where those people were trying to scare me or draw me in and telling me that I was a bad person, maybe. Like, oh, you've done the wrong thing your whole life. See how it is. God doesn't exist. You should just come to the pit with us, or whatever it was they were trying to scare me or try to lie to me about. But I don't believe that I was supposed to die. And if I had seen the other, if I had passed through that dark region and seen heaven, as the way people describe it, like seeing Jesus, seeing deceased relatives, seeing the wonderfulness, the spectacle of heaven, being free of pain, I might not have turned back. Even knowing that I'd be leaving my wife and kids behind, I might not have been, I'd be like, okay, this is, it's tragic, but this is a great place. I think if I had seen it, I would not have returned.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people would have.
Well, yeah, I mean, plenty of people die every day and they don't come back, right?
Exactly.
So.
Well, yeah, I think we've sort of covered everything, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, the way it's affected my life in the sense that I feel like I have a reaffirmed sense of purpose, a renewed commitment to my wife and family. And I feel like the reason I contacted you is I feel like I want to share that it's a different experience. And my number one message is that that place was dark and it was scary, but it's not in control. The person who's in control is Jesus Christ. He's the one who conquered that realm. We're coming up on Easter. He was crucified and died and resurrected on the third day. That area exists, but it is not our destiny. We have a choice to follow him.
And that is an absolutely brilliant way of ending it.